Hello and welcome to the Library Cafe, a weekly program of table talk about books, scholarship, and the formation and circulation of knowledge and culture. I'm your host, Thomas Hill. Our featured guest this week is Mary Kay Lombino, curator of collections at the Francis Lehman Loeb Arts Center on the Vassar campus, who will be talking with us about the exhibition now on view through December 17th entitled Off the Shelf, New Forms in Contemporary Artists Books. Welcome, Mary Kay.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, I wouldn't expect most of our listeners, even those who regularly visit art museums, to know what an artist's book is, given the fact that this is a medium that has never received much play by the museum establishment, nor by art critics, nor by historians of art, with occasional exceptions. So I wonder if you could define for us what an artist's book is, although I realize this is a medium that seems to want to elude any facile categorization, and then perhaps talk a bit about why, as a medium, the artist's book has been so, to use a book term, marginalized by the art industry.
Yes, you're right about the definition of artist's books. It is very malleable, and depending on who you ask, you might get a different definition. But I'll give you one that I came up with, which is that an artist's book is basically a work of art that's realized in book form. And they're often in small editions, sometimes one of a kind, and they employ a wide range of forms, from pop-up books to fold-outs to scrolls, and are often produced in a very detailed manner. So that's sort of a general definition. Mm-hmm. And to address your question about how artist books fit into the larger scheme of art in terms of museums and galleries, I would say that the artist book is really a 20th century form. And like any new form of art, it takes a while. Mm-hmm. It took photography many years before it got to the level that it is now, where there's a photography curator on almost every museum staff. And it's getting that way for artist books. Mm-hmm. Museum of Modern Art in New York is one great example that has a great collection, as well as the Walker Art Center and the National Museum of Women in the Arts. And often there will be a curator who's dedicated directly to that form of art. And you will see slowly, I think, more curators and departments in museums. But I think it takes a while.
There was a small handful of museum librarians that began to develop serious collections back in the 1980s of artist books, including Clive Philpott at the Museum of Modern Art and Rosemary Furtak at the Walker Arts Center. MoMA in the 1990s acquired the entire Franklin Furness archive, and the Getty Center had earlier acquired a large collection from the Gene Brown archive. And there are other librarians now, in fact, all over the place. It's really taken the interest of art librarians everywhere. So there's a market for these things.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to have taken a long time for the librarians and the curators to talk to one another about the collections, almost as though the left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing.
That's true, and I think that as those discussions become more frequent, the books will show up more in exhibitions and less just in the library.
Yeah, it seems to be the case. If you go to any contemporary show in the MoMA now, you see artist books almost invariably. They're vitrines.
Yes, and actually one of the books in the exhibition, the one by Beatrice Milhaes's, Coisa Linda is the title, and that is from MoMA's collection.
Oh, is it? Uh-huh.
And it's part of a series they've been doing now for about 6 or 8 years, where each year they commission a new book by an artist, and there's a library council that handles that. And then it enters the MoMA collection.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
One obvious problem is that these works must be rather difficult to exhibit. You generally can't just hang them on a wall or set them on a pedestal. You often need to build cases for them. And like most books, they address the person beholding them as a solitary reader, almost more than a public viewer. And that books are interactive, naturally. And in a museum setting, it's hard to have that interactivity. Though I noticed in Off the Shelf, people can interact, say, with a Brian Bolot exhibit. And
that's right.
And museum staff will turn pages for you for a lot of the material.
Yeah, and I was very dedicated to making that happen, even though it's slightly counterintuitive to a museum staff to be able to allow visitors to touch things.
Yeah.
So you're right, it does pose an inherent difficulty because books have pages, and they urge to be turned.
Yeah.
And so people do want to look through each page, and I tried to make that accessible in this exhibition. And it does pose a particular challenge to museum staffs, but I think that with 20th century curators working on these collections, they're used to having work that's not easily shown. and they're used to having to problem solve.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
In terms of showing
installations and
installation work, yeah, and various things that, yeah, are maybe meant to challenge, mm-hmm, the viewer rather than to just make it easy for them, yeah, to come in and quickly walk by and say, oh, that's interesting, and keep walking.
Yeah. In terms of the art market, I wonder if the standoffishness that we experienced, say, 15, 20 years ago, doesn't cut both ways between the museum world and artists, and that many book artists have intentionally shunned the museum and gallery establishment by developing a medium that could speak to people outside of the mainstream art market. I'm thinking here especially of the tradition of the democratic multiple, whose better known proponents were Ed Ruscha and Diderot.
Yeah, and I think I would look even further back to the Fluxus movement, mm-hmm, where they were creating games, often little boxes with several little pieces inside, again, posing quite a challenge for display. And that was an intentional way to buck the art market and make objects that are not necessarily marketable, not necessarily easy to display. And a lot of the artists that are working today on artist books began maybe in the 60s or 70s and look back to that moment, which is a period of certainly change in terms of how one displays an object and whether an object is easy to display.
And there does seem to have grown up, and it still exists, a kind of artistic demi-monde in which these works are produced and distributed in an almost arts and crafts way. Artist books are often exhibited and distributed at outlets such as Printed Matter and Granary Books that almost exclusively focus on artist books. And then they're often produced in workshops like the Center for Book Arts or the Visual Studies Workshop in New York, or right across the river here, the Women's Studio Workshop in Rosendale. And, mm-hmm, I think that those traditions are still going on.
Absolutely. And I think that does form another kind of separation between the fine art world in which museums participate and the craft world. And this is a barrier that might be even larger than the one that photography had to overcome, yeah, in being accepted in the museum world, because craft is traditionally understood as being not part of the fine arts. And it's true, many of these books do fall into the category of more craft. And then comes along an artist like Brian Balot, who's in the exhibition, mm-hmm, who really tries to break down that barrier. In fact, when Jerry Saltz saw his exhibition at Canada Gallery in New York last year, his comment in his Village Voice review said something like, perhaps no one told Brian Balot that craft isn't cool.
Yeah, no.
But I don't think Brian cares,
no,
and that's what's wonderful, yeah, about his work.
Well, the book tradition generally, I'm going back to even fine printing, there is a lot of craftsmanship that still goes into certainly printing tradition and the making of books. And, you know, I can attest in terms of the way medieval art has been received, panel and wall paintings, which are actually rather rare, were always considered something much more of interest than manuscript illuminations until quite recently, maybe 20 years ago, people started really focusing on manuscript illuminations. Except for the rare exceptions like the Book of Kells and certain books of ours, they weren't of much interest to art historians.
Right, and in cases like that, we can look forward to the museums who have the resources to make that change, such as the Getty in Los Angeles, where they first had this wonderful collection of illuminated manuscripts and began showing them on a regular basis. Recently, there was an article in the New York Times about their photography collection now getting 7,000 square feet of space dedicated to photography. Uh-huh. So I think when there is a museum such as the Getty who can be kind of ahead of the curve, that maybe they can make a step towards dedicating space to more of the craft arts or the book arts or things like that.
So museums can really play a positive role in this.
Absolutely, if they're interested and willing.
Now, walking into the print galleries of the Francis Lehman Loeb Center where the show is installed, you realize that this is a fairly wild and woolly medium right off the bat. The first thing you see is Brian Balot's, or his installation, Books, 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 and Books. And these are books one can actually handle.
That's right. Yes, and I love to see people walking in and just picking them up, mm-hmm, off the table and starting to flip through them.
Balot's books have the look and feel of the children's books out of which they've been reconstituted, which is something I find interesting in that children's books often seem to serve as sites where there exists much of the kind of interrogation of form and also playfulness that one sees in much of the artist's book tradition. Children's books often employ unusual means of conveying their narratives. There's often an emphasis on surprise, of something unexpected jumping out at you. They deploy illustrations in unusual ways. Their physicality orality is prominent. They often tell of an oral and sometimes primitive relationship with language. I'm especially thinking in all of this of books created for children just learning to read.
Mm-hmm.
And I see this anyway a lot in artist books and in medieval manuscripts also. There's a much more creative engagement with the book as an object than you get in your traditional print book printed for adults.
Yeah, that's a really interesting observation, because what I'm realizing as you're saying this is that children's books, just like artist books, are meant to be looked at more than just to be read. And that's why the design and the different plays of imagery and form become so much more important. So you'll see pop-up books and die-cut books, and Takashi Murakami's book, which is actually a deluxe edition of a children's story and a children's book, are all very common in the book arts world. The story, which goes along with it and is printed in English and Japanese, if you have the time and you can come in and actually read each page of the story, it's a wonderful little tale about a little figure with lots of color. And he meets several different people and animals, and he gives away a little bit of his color each time he meets someone. And at the end, he's this very grayish black and white figure, doesn't have as much color anymore, but now he has all these friends. So it's this wonderful children's story. But the images, especially these seven individual lithographs, are what is really spectacular about the book.
It also works as a sculptural object in the way it stands up on a table. It's
yes.
a nice display piece.
I was really pleased we were able to show that standing up. So each of the seven pages acts as a stand, and it's almost a big sphere that sits on a platform. If we had to show it flat and have the pages turned, it really wouldn't have the same sculptural presence as it does now.
Also, there are the pop-up cutout books of Carlos Garaycoa and Francesca Gabbiani, which might perhaps be described from one perspective as very intricate and beautifully executed children's books for adults, although their content is quite serious.
That's right. Francesca Gabbiani's book, which is just called White Book, has these very whimsical, beautiful die-cut images of the World's Fair in Chicago. But the content is very dark. It's inspired by that book by Eric Larson, in which a serial killer goes around murdering women during the World's Fair. So you're right, it has a little bit of both.
Children's books also, however, all times are often subversive and disturbing.
Right, that's very true.
Garaycoa's a Cuban artist, and he thinks of himself to some extent as an architect.
Yes, and they're a comment on the ways in which utopian ideals have failed us in society. Having grown up and still living in Havana, he has some very strong ideas about how supposed utopian society can function. And the other piece that's in the exhibition, it's called Plaza Vieja, that's in direct reference to a plaza in Havana. And these are both miniature versions of larger works that he's done. Mm-hmm. So he'll often do an installation and then do a book about the installation.
Yeah. Artists who do artist books often work in other media.
Absolutely. Another example is Miriam Dim, who is an installation artist, and her book, Don't Forget to Ask for Directions, it's called, is literally a kit that if you were to pull all the pieces apart and put it back together again, according to the instructions, you would rebuild the installation that she created for her gallery show in Los Angeles at Post Gallery on Wilshire, the same year that she did the book. So in some ways it's a book, in another way it's more of a toy or a puzzle.
It's also sort of document then for the installation.
Yes, exactly.
Most of the works in Off the Shelf fall into the category of what art historians and anthropologists call erratic objects, or at least many of them do. They have in common what Betty Bright, when she lectured at the opening of the show, termed a ceremonial presence, without giving up whatever it is that also makes them books, that is, they present and or examine the book as a cult object or fetish, and they also address the psychological and cultural conditions that serve as the basis for these associations and behaviors towards books. And most prominent in this vein is David Hammond's book, The Holy Bible, Old Testament.
Yes, it's a wonderful book. It's kind of an inside joke, but it's very easy to get the joke. It's a Bible on the outside, leather-bound with gold leaf, and it has a wonderful presence as ceremonial object. And then I also have it shown open because on the inside, it's basically a copy of the catalogue raisonné of Marcel Duchamp's work.
another kind sort of cult object.
Exactly. Yeah. It is sort of a wry comment on the ways in which art historians have made Marcel Duchamp's work almost a sacred place in art history.
I took it as a criticism or an interrogation of the art book.
Yeah, the art book and also the ready-made, because he's using a ready-made basically to critique the idea of a ready-made. And I like the word ceremonial object because I do see a lot of these objects, the books, as something that looking at them becomes sort of a ritual. And the turning of the pages and the holding of the book in your hands and all of these activities become very much a part of looking and understanding the object that you're looking at.
Working in a similar vein, maybe, a British artist Paul Noble's series of painted found books with cover texts that read like juvenile jokes such as Playing Twister by Eileen Over, Praying to Jesus by Neil Down, Difficult Ideas by Theo Redical, and The Bad Creditor by Owen Money also seem to hold a book responsible for certain fetish behavior.
Absolutely. And Paul Noble is a jokester.
Yeah, they're one-liners.
They are. They're one-liners, which it might take a few seconds to catch, but as soon as you do, the joke is pretty much done.
Yeah.
But I always wonder what's inside the books, which you never see.
No.
They're just the covers that he's manipulated by painting them over. And one never really bothers to see what's inside because that's not what is important, which is very different than a lot of the other works in the show.
No, I have to say I was just down in the bookstore, and after having just gone over to the Loeb Center and looked at the show, looking at his covers and then glancing at the covers on commercially published books mostly that you find in the bookstore downstairs, I had the same kind of suspicion of them in a sense that he inculcates.
Yeah, it basically brings home the comment that you can't judge a book by its cover.
No, it's true. Interesting about those books, if you look at the grouping that you have there, each of the subjects that he deals with, Praying to Jesus, religion, Difficult Ideas by Theo Redical, scholarly works, Bad Creditor, works about finance, they all do describe in a way certain social and cultural systems of aura and fetish.
Right. And especially the ubiquitous self-help book.
Oh, yes.
Because I think those are the easiest target to attack, and he does that wonderfully in the book called I Want a Baby by IVF.
Yeah. Several artists in the show concern themselves with exploring ideas about documentation in general. Russell Crotty's work, Jupiter Strip Sketch, for instance, does this, where he documents via drawing the movement of gases across the face of Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
And his work often deals with the solar system.
Yes. His pastime, I could say, is looking through his massive telescope, which is in his yard, on a big hill in the hills of Malibu. And he'll take little sketches when he's looking through his telescope and then later translate those into much larger volumes of either, books with several drawings, such as this one, or various drawings that just are incredibly detailed. So I think that it kind of combines science and art, but it's in a very layman's term of science.
Well, there is a tradition of illustration in the sciences still. Textbooks are often illustrated by artists, draftspeople.
Right.
So negotiations between private and public often makes its way into artist books where conventions of self-presentation and a personal narrative are explored and reinvented. And Martin Willner's series Journal of Evidence does this mostly as a matter of psychological narrative that he recorded on the New York City subways.
Mm-hmm. And there's another one that he's actually on the ferry. So it's wherever he happens to go in New York. And this is an artist who was born in Queens and has lived in New York his whole life and traverses these five boroughs as part of his daily activities. And while doing so, he always has a small leather-bound accordion book along with him and an ink pen. And whatever he sees, wherever he is, he takes little drawings, mostly of people, and then adds text that is basically an observation of what he sees and hears with a bit of his own commentary. And I would say a bit of his own personal inner monologue as well.
Yeah, so it's a sort of self-analysis at the same time as he's documenting what he sees around him on his travels.
Yes, and funny that you should use that word because he is a psychoanalyst himself, and he does see these as a bit of a catharsis and a way for him to analyze himself. And I think you're right. I think that border between the private and the public is very much a part of those.
Yeah. Interesting thing about his work is every page is in an independent drawing. Everything he sees is linked together throughout the whole book. So there's no it's all one picture, essentially.
So, yes, yeah. You can maybe compare it to a stream of consciousness, but it's right there on the page.
The media historian and book artist Joanna Drucker has referred to the earlier tradition of the livre d'artiste, that is, the commercially produced, highly crafted, limited edition collaborations between artists, poets, and editors of the early part of the 20th century particularly, as having been a radical innovation at the end of the 19th century that has since gone brain dead. However, the work in the show that you mentioned by the Brazilian artist Beatrice Milhazes called Quasilinda, Something Beautiful, belies this statement in that Milhazes does seem to have taken the extenuation of traditional production values and methodologies characteristic of these earlier deluxe editions to a new plane, blurring to some extent the traditional distinction between these two forms.
Definitely, and I think that that work by Beatrice Milhazes is a great example of how artist books have changed over the years. And this show covers about the last 10 years and is basically just a sampling of the ways in which artists have taken the traditional artist book and brought it to new heights, basically. This work was commissioned by MoMA, as I mentioned, by their library council. And the artist is used to doing prints, but this was the first book she'd ever done. And she decided to have it be inspired by many of the lyricists and songwriters that are known to her country, which is Brazil. So Caetano Veloso, Gilberto Gil, and several other composers are referenced in the book, and their lyrics are often appear there in English and in Portuguese. And so instead of actually illustrating directly a text, the way that many books used to do, she has a looser connection to the original text. And she sees this book as something that really explains the way that Brazil helped to shape her identity through its music and through its images and its colors and its vibrancy.
It's a very sensual book, very decorative, speaking of, you know, the craft tradition,
yes.
But at the same time very abstract.
Exactly, and her other work is very similar to that as well. But seeing it in a book form with the different types of paper, and she uses acetate and vellum, and the way that it's bound, it really kind of sends the whole point home.
Yeah. Also in this vein, I think, are the hybrid books of Monique van Genderen. These are plates of abstract watercolor drawings in series and placed in commercial bindings, and they seem to belie the rule that abstract expressionism and artist books are natural enemies. The idea of the book provides the flat artworks with a framework for a new way of looking at these works.
Yes, and I also see these a little bit like sketchbooks. Monique's work is usually much larger, often installation-based, where she's invited by a museum or a public entity to create a large-scale mural. And for that, she uses acrylic and vinyl, but it's still very intuitive. So if she's invited to a place, she'll often come with her supplies and maybe a few sketches, but she won't know what she's going to do until she's actually there, and she creates it on the spot. So I was in her studio a couple of years ago, and she was showing me her large-scale works, and she said, oh, and I've also been doing these tiny little watercolors. And she said, I've always wanted to make an artist book, so eventually I'm going to try to have these bound into a book. At that point, she was just thinking of making one. At this point, I think she's made close to 20.
And these are things we can page through right in the exhibit.
That is, the docent can turn the pages for you.
I see.
And
okay.
Yes, you can see every page if you'd like. It might take a while because I think there's 9 books in the show. But when she decided to have the books bound in these linen, beautifully bound books, she also designed and created the shelf so that there's a certain direction by the artist as to how we view this work. And it is something that becomes very intimate because you stand by the shelf and you're able to see each page and really get to know the artist's hand in a way that isn't quite possible if you're looking at one of her large-scale installations.
Yeah. So one final question. Off the Shelf focuses on mostly 21st century artist books with a few inclusions of works produced in the 1990s. And by subtitling the exhibition New Forms of Artist Books, I expect you mean to situate them to some extent within a context where there are old forms of artist books they can be compared to. So does this selection of very recent work have anything to say to us about how this genre is developing, or is this too select and small a sample?
It is a small sample, and I'm not sure that it will be any sort of definitive answer as to which direction artist books are going. However, the sampling that I've chosen, basically what these books have in common is an interest in attention to detail and also the ways in which the artist's book can become a more intimate format for these artists who, as you mentioned, many of them have other formats and other ways of making art, that they can shift their focus into this other form that, of course, has a long tradition, but perhaps they're breaking with tradition.
Except for Carlos Garaycoa, I notice that the politically motivated pluralist work that characterized artist books in the 60s and 70s, there don't seem to be any offspring of this tradition in the show.
That's true, yeah. Although I might look at some of Simon Evans' books as mm-hmm. having a bit of political content, but much lighter, yeah. On a much lighter note. For instance, the small book, which is illustrated in The Checklist, and there's one little comment that says something about, oh, it says Hitler was an artist too. And then it has a little arrow towards that and says the lady at the Whitney liked this one. So yeah. It's mentioning both the fact that, you know, mentioning Hitler, first of all, and then the lady at the Whitney, which I'm assuming he's talking about a curator at the Whitney. So the kind of politics that are inherent in artist books becoming accepted into museums is inferred in that comment.
Oh, interesting.
So if you look very closely at some of Simon Evans's work, you will see some more subversive commentary. And perhaps David Hammond's, too, is a slightly politicized commentary. But for the most part, this work is much more about the craft of the making of the artist book.
The Democratic Multiple and the pluralist movement was not about craft. It was sort of anti-craft, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah. And that's why a lot of those books were more, they looked like made from photocopies and just kind of stapled together and quickly thrown together. But they were more about content.
Yeah. One last thing I wanted to mention was the catalog. You have a brochure catalog that is actually free at the show, and it's quite a beautiful little catalog. One of the things that museums do when they put a show of any kind on, apart from making the works in the show public or publicizing them, they also feel responsible for documenting the material.
Yeah, and in this book in particular, I tried to have the design reflect the idea of a book as an object. So I worked with a designer in New York City whose name is Beverly Joel, who has a very strong interest in artist books, to create an object that would have its own life. And along those same lines, I commissioned two poets, Joshua Beckman and Michael Joyce, who's here on campus, to create individual new poetry to be included in the book. And again, that's something that you can only do if you're creating a book. So it was a way to kind of add in something extra.
Yeah, and the poems frame the content.
Yes,
quite nice.
Yes, exactly. Thanks.
Okay, so I want to thank you, Mary Kay, for stopping by to talk with us about the exhibition.
Of course. I'm glad to be here, and hopefully people can go and see the exhibition. As Tom said, it's on display until December 17th.
And it's a really fun exhibition.
Oh, thanks.
We have been talking with Mary Kay Lombino, curator of collections at the Francis Lehman Loeb Art Center at Vassar College, about the exhibition she has assembled entitled Off the Shelf, New Forms in Contemporary Artist Books, that will be on view through December 17th. Next week, we'll be talking with Rebecca Edwards, professor of history here at Vassar, about her new book entitled New Spirits, Americans in the Gilded Age. If you tuned in late, you can access a podcast of this and earlier editions of the Library Cafe at library-cafe.org, as well as a listing of upcoming guests.